And they can show their
fruit. Ten items are preliminary necessity for beginning devotion, discharge of devotional service, and then the principles. They're the preliminary items, that's all. It's not that you have to list all ten. What is the category that this ten represents? It's okay if you roll to ten, it's okay. For the first paragraph, in its first sentence in the next paragraph, these ten items are preliminary necessities for beginning devotional discharge of devotional service and meditative principles. So that's what they are. That's the answer to the question, John. If you listen to them, that's okay, but they were looking for a categorical explanation of that. Okay, so does anybody have that down? Or does everybody just list the ten?
I didn't list them. I'm just one page on this. I want page of the page 54.
Page
56.
In other words, you didn't do it.
No, because I was like, this is I was thinking this would be like completely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's the question doesn't really warrant you to copy now. So I was thinking maybe you would think a little bit. But anyway.
It's probably not.
Not that you can't think, it's just that there's no time to think. We like to think, but we just don't have any time. Right? We're just running from one thing to another without thinking. Okay, so next set of instructions are, what are the secondary ten meditative principles? What's the category of them?
Says, without following the above mentioned ten principles, one cannot properly elevate himself to the platform of sadhana bhakti, or devotional service and practice.
So what are they now? Because it mentions that the above ten, but these, if you look at the way they're written,
Well, these are the what not to do.
Yeah. It's one of those things that you should avoid. First things are things that you do, second ones things that you should avoid. One should not disrespect, one should not give unnecessary trouble, one should avoid offenses. One should not read too many books, one should not instruct them, one should usually not, one should give up. So they're mostly nuts, they're all don'ts. Ten do's, ten don'ts. Okay, things that you should avoid. And what are the 44 other items of devotional service? They are the following. Okay. These are just general activities of devotional service. The general activities which make up the process of bhakti. That's more or less. So it takes, you know, you could list all 44. And I think that's what the question is asking, but I mean, it's obvious you can read the answers. So, but it's good you listed them, because if you did list them, it shows that you know, going over them, it helps you remember them. What did you write? Did you write anything?
Hmm? I write, I put the
page number.
In the items, I put where are, and then the other, number four.
You did write it also.
Because I think when the Sangha, then we didn't have a sheet.
Okay. Alright, so these are four make up the general activities of the book. All 64 do, but the next 44 are just, they're more general. The first 20 are more specific. Okay, so next question is, explain the difference between the basic principles and the details. Who knows that answer?
A basic principle is that one must accept a spiritual master. Exactly how one follows the instructions of a spiritual master is considered a detail. In this chapter, Srila Rupa Goswami does not wish to mention the details.
Okay.
It's just in the broad understanding.
Yeah. Details are, you know, these are the categories of activities and details. Very different. Like this, for example, one spiritual master's instructions may be different from another spiritual master's specific and detailed instructions. Like, for instance, give an example. In the Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati emphasizing forks of distribution forks. Prabhupada followed that, that's a detail. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, Paramguru, or even the Guru, didn't emphasize these things. So, you know, a spiritual master will give detailed instructions on how the mission may go on, or how, you know, the details on how to do things. Some spiritual masters emphasize opening temples, others don't even do that, they just do sankirtan. The details how the spiritual master presents the principles may differ from one to another. Srila Prabhupada, for example, he gave sannyas to people who were, you know, quite young, which was never easy at the time. He also allowed women to live in temples. He allowed women to take Brahminical initiation, which is never done. So that's a detail. So details differ that way. The principles are.
Well, behind these details, there is a principle that Prabhupada was following, like when he allowed to leave the Matajis in the temples, he was doing that based on another principle.
One of the principles mentions that, you know what that is. He says one cannot change the social custom of a country. So he came into this country, he saw the social custom. It was very intimate interaction between men and women. So he felt that he wasn't able to, you know, preach effectively by disturbing, by doing that. Another thing that Prabhupada said, that we don't need costly temples, because Lord Chaitanya just, you know, emphasized the sankirtan. But because the Westerners are attached to opulence and are attracted by opulence, Prabhupada said we have made this, you know, very opulent society to not attract the Western minds. He said, if I would have sat down underneath the tree and chanted Hare Krishna, who would have come? Sorry, you know, like, people come and see a beautiful temple and see nice deities, other activities, and they're attracted by the externals. And gradually they can come in here. And once they start hearing, then they get light. So, that's the feature of Srila Prabhupada's preaching. But generally for women, he said, he couldn't change the social custom. in the country. That should be, that's an acharya. He knows how to preach according to time, place, and
circumstances. Also, he was giving protection to women. The principle, very cultural, gives protection to women and children.
Yeah, but that's always there. It's always there. But that's done by the husband, generally. The husband really is the spiritual master of the wife. He has more of an interaction with his wife than the guru has generally. So the guru, when he has a husband and wife who are disciples, he most of the time instructs the husband. And secondary, he instructs the wife to follow the husband, that's all. He doesn't give a lot of, you know, detailed instructions to the wife. He gives it all to the husband, and the husband more or less is meant to be the spiritual guide for the wife, and the wife is meant to follow the husband. So, that's there like that. So giving protection usually comes from her. A woman is protected in her youth by her parents, in her middle age by her husband, and in her old age by her grown-up sons. This is Vedic culture. In the case of women who are single and just came to the temple with no one to give up their family, then he said the protector is the temple president. He's supposed to give shelter and protection to women who have no, you know, what we say, given shelter. Just the Matichis come into the temple, they're not married, the temple president is responsible to make sure they're protected and it's like very difficult to be a temple president. A lot of responsibility. But can I answer your question? Yeah? Yes. The woman gives the protection generally by her husband. Prabhupada said all women should be married and all men should remain brahmacharya. And he looked at the devotees and said, it's up to the organizers to figure out how to do that. Women do better when they're married, and men generally, you know, unless they're really fallen, it's easier to practice Krishna consciousness when you're not married. As soon as you get married, Prabhupada says your spiritual life practically stops. Why? Because you hate enough to divert your attention to taking care of life. Why? A big thing, and then there's life, and then there's children, and then there's house, and then there's apartment, and this, that. Prabhu, no time for chatting rounds. Well, that's what you get. Just no time. As soon as you get hooked up with married life, you practically all your attention is on that. And Prabhupada said in one verse, licit or illicit, it's all illicit. So you should understand. I mean, there's some people who have to get married. If you have to, okay, that's one thing. But if you can avoid it, it's the best, the fastest way back to God. This is just so much unnecessary trouble. Just for a little itch you have to scratch. Sex life is like an itch. Scratch. So just like an itch. It's unbearable, but you just tolerate it. After a while, the itch goes away. Sex life is like that. Don't pay attention to it. Stay engaged in service. And then it goes away. And for that little scratching of an itch, so much trouble. So much. This, that. Oh, God. My wife wants social life. She wants fire. kids, when the kids grow up, and you have to feed the kids, you have to educate them, you have to take care of them. It's just like, it's better to be in the desert with this your Java beat than me. I'm just telling you, for, in other words, my point is, if you can avoid it, the best way to go. If for some reason you can't avoid it and get married and become a responsible gnostic, but really it's a lot of extra activities that really are not necessary for spiritual life. You just have to do it for that ashram festival. So just tolerate it. And as you develop your attraction for Krishna, your attraction for women or Maya decreases. Actually, you lose your attraction for Maya after a while because you develop your attraction for Krishna. So really, it's not easy to give up that desire, but we can replace it by developing our attraction for Krishna. And then we're attracted to Krishna, really. We see all the other attractions as really just distractions. So that's the key. We have to learn how to become. We have to learn how to become attracted to Krishna, like the devotion teaches us. What are the three most important items of the 64 principles of devotional service? Yashiva.
One should accept spiritual master. One should take initiation from him in his servant.
That's mentioned, right?
Yeah.
And these are most. Accepting the shelter, accepting initiation, and serving with respect and reverence. Actually, the position of the spiritual master in relationship with the disciple is everything. Great souls say, I don't know Krishna, I only know my Guru Maharaj. It's because of his mercy that I'm able to engage in devotional service. So for a serious devotee, his spiritual master is everything. Spiritual master represents Krishna in person. So he serves the spiritual master as Krishna is personally present. And the spiritual master, his service is to do whatever is necessary to bring that person back to God. And that is everything. So these are the three most important regulative principles. Accepting shelter, accepting initiation, serving and respecting others. You taking shelter? How are you getting initiated? You gotta get initiated at this point? You don't know the exact date, but you're getting initiated. Maharaj told me he's doing the initiation twice. Once in New York, now, sometime this week. And then he's also doing it in Vrindavan. So that's when you get initiated in Vrindavan?
Some of the devotees said it's on Raj Mahal, apparently some other saw the list. So it's my name is on that.
Yeah, you should get initiated. You need to stop. I think you're ready for initiation.
And there was a hands awesome on the list.
Good. I told him also that you should make contact with him. Very good. You're still aspiring, right?
His name also on the list.
He's on the list. On the list too, but we didn't know.
I don't know if he did. He's
Maharaj said that if you got blessings from Guru Rai Maharaj, you see him out of the book of your initiation. So he did it. So he'd be initiated.
Well, there's a chance that I might be there. Well, you know the date?
No, I'm generally, I'm just guessing the world that we can, because he always does at that time.
sounds like that's right. Define what that is. We have to come back from Boston to get what we can do. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. How long have you been chanting? 15 rounds.
Since 2010. 3 years.
Steady every day. Following the principles. Okay. These are the three most important. Explain one of the five most important items of the 64 principles of devotional service.
Worshipping the deity. 2 is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. 3 is associating among the devotees. 4 is Sankirtan. 5 is living in the Torah.
Okay. And living in the Torah has extended itself in practical terms to living in a holy place. And davening the Torah, or even living in a temple, you can take it one stage. These are called the five potent forms of devotional service. And Srila Rupa Goswami explains that even a gross neophyte can experience ecstatic symptoms in contact with any one or more of these. So sometimes we see someone who comes to Krishna consciousness immediately. They're chanting and dancing and they're in ecstasy. They just walked into the temple like 2 days ago and they're already, you know, smiling and bouncing around and so many nice things. So these are done by one of these five. These are five most potent forms. What happens is what happens after a while. At first, you come in and you're chanting and dancing. You know, what happened? After a while, you wonder what happened. It used to be ecstatic. Now what happened? Look what happened. So the answer is generally after a while we start seeing things in the mundane way. And we start seeing everything in a mundane way. We see the road is mundane and we see the process is mundane. We lose that, we say, freshness. Or we may also start committing offenses. We must be really careful. Because these five are so powerful that you can always get ecstatic symptoms in contact with these, which are so powerful. Okay. Explain how the 64 items of devotional service can help one attain pure devotional service. Gonzalez.
Because these 64 principles include our activities of body, mind, speech, and devotional service means engaging all our senses in the service of the Lord.
Okay. So these 64 items make up the items of body, mind, and speech, which is the complete entity. Okay. So that's the answer. So devotional service means absorption, to be absorbed in our whatever we're doing under the guidance of the spiritualist. Once you'll be absorbed. It's hard to get absorbed in Kali Yuga because there's so many distractions. But one has to learn the art of becoming absorbed. It's an art, getting absorbed in something. Every of us have been absorbed in something in our life. And that's the way we should be all the time in our service, absorbed in it. With intelligence and with enthusiasm. Okay. Chapter 7, we can begin. So we'll go through the chapter, start reading, and then we can start discussing. So we have a bunch of categories. We can go from one person to another, and depending on how long the category is, we can. So who wants to do the first one? Accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master.
In the 11th Council of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a chapter of the Maharaj. My dear King, please know for certain that in the material world there is no happiness. It is simply a mistake to think that there is happiness here, because this place is full of nothing but miserable conditions. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Everyone should try to find such a bona fide spiritual master in order to fulfill his mission of life, which is to transform himself to the plane of spiritual bliss. The purport is that one should not accept as a spiritual master someone who is bull number one, who has no direction according to the scriptural injunctions, whose character is doubtful, who does not follow the principles of devotional service, or who has not conquered the influence of the six sense-gratifying agents. The six agents of sense-gratification are the tongue, the genitals, the belly, anger, the mind, and words. Anyone who has practiced controlling these six is permitted to make disciples all over the world. To accept such a spiritual master is a crucial point for advancement in spiritual life. One who is fortunate enough to come under the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master is sure to traverse the path of spiritual salvation without any doubt.
Okay, so here we're getting into a more detailed explanation of what it means to accept the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, and what is a bona fide spiritual master. Well, so, before you can accept shelter, you have to know what you're looking for. Spiritual master is, the qualification is, he must know the scriptures and must be able to present arguments based on the scriptures and defeat all opposing arguments. This is a verse from the 11th canto. Tasmad guru padyeta jigyasa shreya utama seva na seva. What is that? Seva na nishnatma brahma upasraya swayam. Sarva seva na nishnatma. 11:521 is it? Okay. Who's got that book? Mr. Oh, yeah, that one, yeah. It's in there.
Oh, look in there.
Tasmad. T-A-S-M-A-D. That's good. Tasmad Gurun or Pradyajigyasa Sayamuta. Sabde paranyasvati, sabde paranyasvati ma, sada brahma upasvayasvaya.
Tasmad guram papadeta.
Shreya, sabde parecha nishnatmam brahma upasvayasvaya. You can read the translation.
Therefore, any person who seriously desires real happiness must seek a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a bona fide guru is that he has realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken shelter of the Supreme Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, should be understood to be a bona fide spiritual master.
Mm-hmm. So this is the qualifications. This is a very, what we say, powerful verse describing what is the qualification of this
There
are other verses which describe also, but this one Prabhupada explains that this is, one has to, before one can sit on the Vyasa Sun, he has to know the scriptures and be able to defeat all arguments like that, based on the teachings of scripture. He has to leave aside all other material considerations. That means he has no other activity, of course. We see that a grihastha can be a spiritual master, so he may also have that, but still he has no material endeavors. He simply executes the functions of the grihastha ashram accordingly. A person who has what are the things that are the disqualification?
He's a woman alive.
Oh, fine. In this day and age, unfortunately, we have such, there's a whole lot of number one fools. You know, someone will have a dream, and in the dream, somebody will declare themselves as being the next Acharya of the world. What they may have. They may have some mystic power and think that they're God or some guru incarnation. So a spiritual master has to be able to, he's not a fool in the sense that he knows what he's supposed to do, and he knows Krishna. That's why he's not fool number one. He's not fool number one. He knows Krishna. Or at least he knows enough about Krishna to where he can impart that knowledge to others. His words are basically his means for preaching. So we have this. Of course, he also can write. Speaking and writing, he speaks two aspects. He tells you what's in the scripture and the philosophy, and he also teaches you practical techniques for how to understand this knowledge in the day-to-day life. He teaches both. In some cases, we don't get the practical. We just get the general. But if you just get the general, then follow it. Therefore, it's important to constantly be in touch with the instructions of the spiritual master. To hear the voice of the spiritual master, to hear, the classes, writings, words, everything. To see the picture of the spiritual master. As much as we can come in contact with the spiritual master, that is our shelter in Krishna consciousness. That is our guide. So he's not a fool. What else is the disqualification?
He just goes on speaking without quoting scripture.
Yeah.
That's very popular.
That's from quoting the scripture.
Yeah, very popular today.
What's another one? Character is doubtful. There's some reason for doubt, and one should stay back for some reason. He does not follow the principles of devotional service. Does not conquer the influence of. What is that verse? Bhachyavedam, Manasakrala Vedam, Upasta Vedam, Udara Vedam. One who.
A solid person is able to tolerate the urge of the tongue and faith, the order, tongue, belly, mind, genitals.
Anger and words. That's six things. So three are mental and three are physical. Words, anger, and mind are mind, and then we have tongue, general, belly in general. Prabhupada said straight line. The tongue wants to eat, and the belly gets filled, and then the general, and then it pushes down onto the genitals, and then one desires to satisfy the genitals. So one has to be careful in the matter of eating and in speaking. Two things. Because when you control the tongue, you can control the belly and you can control the genitals. If you don't control the tongue, then it's very difficult to control the belly and genitals. That's why we take up fasting on Ekadasi to help control the belly. And the control of the tongue, what is the way to control the tongue?
Chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasad.
Yeah, two ways. These are the two things. Chant the holy names and use the time to discuss the pastimes and the Lord. Use the time to discuss the philosophy of Bhakti Yoga. And generally we don't get into frivolous talk. All of it is called Projapa. Useless, mundane, unrelated talks. These things actually cause the mind to become disturbed and then gradually make one's ability to practice devotional service difficult. That's why many sages and saints, they remain alone in holy places, because they don't want to be in contact with the general mass of people, because they don't want to interact with them and then become, what they say, affected or polluted. But we take the chance, we preach, and if when we preach we get special mercy or special consideration. So there's a risk in preaching. Preaching is a risk. And you see, many people have become preachers and have fallen down from devotional service because the risk is great. You have to interact with material energy, you have to interact. See, preaching is not easy. Don't think it's easy. Speaking to some people is not preaching. Preaching means to be able to somehow or other bring them from one place to the next step gradually and bring them closer and closer. And that means you have to be someone, become part of their life. Becoming part of their life means that also you have to be careful not to become affected. If you get too close or too affected by that, then you can also go down. And then we see even great preachers sometimes again become attracted to the material energy and give up the emotional service. It happens many times in our movement. The majority of the sannyasis in our movement have fallen down. The majority. Prabhupada initiated a lot of sannyasis, most of them are gone. About 70-80% of the sannyasis that Prabhupada initiated fell down. So it's not an easy job to preach. You're doing preaching, you're doing preaching. So be very careful in contact with that material energy. And be very especially controlling your mind, controlling your senses. It's easy to become distracted. It's easy to become, again, affected by that material.
In regards to preaching, I was hearing a lecture last year, actually. And this devotee was saying that if one is preaching but he has no one to check him, then he'll fall down. And
good chance, yeah.
Generally speaking, he said, if one of the ones who preaches, because we're preaching, a lot of things come, you know, a lot of facility may come, a lot of accolades may come and praise. So he said, unless you also want to check you, then it's a very...
It's called Ranga Tarangi. It's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti as the five, let's say, faults of bhakti. One accepts the accolades or the perks as the standard for advancement. You're fallen, but people are praising you. So you reject the fact that you're fallen and you just accept the praise. You have to be always careful to check yourself, because other people may see you in a different way. Or you're so nice, You're so merciful. You're so kind.
Yeah, they're right.
Even if you don't, you know, say it, in your mind you're thinking like that. I am kind of merciful. I am kind of, you know, I am a little advanced, actually. And that's the beginning of it. We didn't even fall back. So, I'm very, very careful. So one has to always know that one is an instrument for the previous acharya's lesson. And therefore, whatever they can do is by their mercy. So we can accept the perks and the accolades and use them as a further opportunity for service. That's all. And not to accept them personally. If we do, we become fallen. Bhaktisiddhanta speaks about that because of the zoo animal. Look at the zoo animal. He's sitting on this big, big seat, and so many people are bowing down before him and saying his presence. Surely, in his mind, he is feeling delighted. He is no better than an animal in the zoo. But then he goes on to say, but I will accept that position, and even if it means perdition, it means, you know, I become criticized and blasphemed. Why? Because it's the order of Lord Chaitanya. By my command, the Guru saved the land. Therefore, he accepts it on behalf. Not because we want to be in that position, but we do it as a service. It's a service, that's all. And it's a service that's necessary. Because if there wasn't anyone to do it, then how would we make more people Krishna conscious? So it's a risk. Preaching is a risk. But always, therefore, one has to be very, very careful to stay connected with. And if you have someone to check you, it's important, it's necessary. You can't slip. And if you read the pastime of Chota Haridasa Mochitaya, he was in the sannyasa order of life. And he went on the order of Bhagavan Acharya, begging rice to be used to cook for Lord Chaitanya's meal. He went to one elderly lady named Mahavi Devi. Mahavi Devi was in the renounced order of life. She was old, and she was a renunciate too. But somehow or other, he doesn't speak of the details at all, but Lord Chaitanya, when the rice came back, and then it was cooked, and then he ate it, he said, where did this rice come from? In his mind, he could understand how Chota Haridas deviated. Somehow or other, it says that he associated, Lord Chaitanya was strict, he associated with women in order to enjoy sex gratification. He associated with women in order to preach, that is Krishna consciousness. You associate with them in order to find satisfaction on your senses, that's a deviation. And Mahaprabhu said, I cannot tolerate such a person. So he was talking about sannyas. But even in brahmacharya, we should be very, very careful in association with the opposite sex. Therefore, we use the word mother. Mother is not simply a term that is just a nice cultural word. It helps one to keep the relationship, what we say, within the spiritual dimensions. Because mother denotes respect, and it denotes a type of relationship that is not, you know, sensual. You don't have a sensual relationship with your mother. Therefore, as Chanaka Panda says, one sees all women except their own wife as mother. She's all women except their own wife. So this is what we do. So brahmachari, sannyas, very strict in the relationship to women. We don't hate women as a class, nor do we, you know, somehow, you know, become freaked out when they're around. You know, I know some brahmacharis that are fanatics. So. But usually the ones that are the most fanatical when you wind up getting married later on. You have to know the balance. And it's best to avoid their association completely, 100%. But if you can't, then...
America,
I'm giving you the rest of those questions. America is, yeah. But even people in ISKCON don't think they think Prabhupada's teachings and they're like apply to India when I go west. But one should look at the casualty rate in ISKCON. And the casualty rate's high. We got a high. Really high.
War statistic.
Prabhupada said, don't be surprised if who leaves can be surprised in these days. And he explains that, you know, 80-90% of our grihasthas have been divorced. 75-80% of the sannyasis have fallen down. Very few brahmacharis in the temples now. When the brahmacharis are in the temples, you can't tell whether they're really a brahmachari. So, you know, we have to be very careful because the material energy is very strong. Anyway, avoid that association, and when you're in that association, always keep a proper, how we say, frame of mind and a proper speech pattern. Don't become frivolous. Don't become, you know, loose. And stick to the subject, whatever it is, and go on.
On Sankirtana, I don't approach my enemies at all.
Good.
Only if they come over, which is very rare, and then I'll...
When I was doing Sankirtana, I didn't say so. Some people thought that was fanatical.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
You want to, the word fanatical is not really a word that really, it needs explanation. Fanatical for the right thing is okay. The thing is, what makes fanaticism fanaticism if it doesn't have any practicality? Right. And in the sense of avoiding the association of women, we should be very careful, very strict. Look at the brahmacharis and champari. No association. None. Zero. And if a woman approaches them, they actually become very concerned. Because in India, women don't approach the brahmacharis. They just don't. But in the West, nobody knows what a brahmachari is or what a, you know, what is the proper etiquette. So, I commend you for that. But there's two dangers. There's one is that I told us, there's those who will just try to more or less live in a world of illusion and think that I must never talk to women, never look at women, never speak to women, never go near women, and one after a while get married. That's the other. And then there's the other ones that are just loose with their relationship. And gradually they can't execute devotional service because their minds are too disturbed. Once the mind becomes disturbed, then it's very difficult to chant Hare Krishna. Very difficult. So one has to practice, you know, mind and sense control very strictly. Otherwise, it's just so much of a struggle. So learn these six
This is the first verse of Nectar instructions.
Okay, any other questions on the first one? Discussion? Accepting the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master.
When they refer to initiation, that means diksha, right? So this is a very good instruction. How are people really not reading the books? And this is a very clear instruction, because before I was a little bewildered, you know, there are a lot of branched off philosophies now. I was hoping I'd just say shiksha from Prabhupada, and diksha isn't, shiksha is more important than diksha. Like, this initiation is the branch of diksha.
Clear.
Very.
Okay. But when you have a cloud in your mind, you can't see the sun. Mm-hmm. When you don't want to surrender, then you can come up with reasons why you shouldn't surrender. The premise is I don't want to surrender, or I don't want to surrender, so therefore I'll come up with other reasons why I'm actually surrendered. I am surrendered, but this is the way I surrender. But they call it standard. You have to understand that the living entities' natures are these envious of the Lord. And he's also envious of the Lord's pure devotees. So the pure devotees represent the Lord, and to serve and to hear from a pure devotee is a process. But one has to change. If there's just no transformation in one's consciousness, if there's no transformations in one's life, then what is the use of practicing? Information, no transformation. And you see in our temples, you know, people can come and nothing changes in their life. Nothing. They go on for years and practically the same thing. No change. If you're not changing, if you are the same way you were 6 months ago and you are now, you have to understand, I'm not making any advancement. This process is a metamorphosis. It's a matter of coming from, you know, the butterfly, coming the silkworm to the butterfly. We're going through changes. We're making advancement. Krishna's taking us one step at a time. And the knowledge we receive is the foundation for, you know, our practice. So as we receive this knowledge, we're meant to apply it in our life. So this principle of envy doesn't allow us to make the next step. It forces us to stay where we are because we want to be the enjoyer. We want to be the co-enjoyers. Krishna's enjoyer, but so am I. And therefore we make our own program. Know about program. Study the lives of the acharyas, study the lives of the great souls, and see that they were sold out to the instructions of the spiritual master. Prabhupada said, I know nothing but the instructions of my spiritual master. He said, my spiritual master is wrong, but he's right. That's the real disciple. He only knows the instructions of the spiritual master. Nothing else. He doesn't want to know anything. And those instructions are everything. He doesn't need anything else. So those who have these other philosophies, they're really not surrendered, nor do they want to be surrendered. They just come and they present themselves being surrendered. Just follow Prabhupada, it's easier. Any other discussions? Okay, second one.
Accepting initiation from the spiritual master and receiving instructions. Okay. Sage Prabhuda continued to speak to the king as follows. My dear king, a disciple has to accept the spiritual master not only as spiritual master, but also as the representative of the supreme personality of Godhead and the Supersoul. In other words, the disciple should accept the spiritual master as God, because he is the external manifestation of Krishna. This is confirmed in every scripture, and a disciple should accept the spiritual master as such. One should learn Srimad Bhagavatam seriously and with all respect and veneration for the spiritual master. Hearing and speaking Srimad Bhagavatam is the religious process which elevates one to the platform of serving and loving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The attitude of the disciple should be to satisfy the bona fide spiritual master. Then it will be very easy for him to understand spiritual knowledge. This is confirmed in the Vedas, and Rupa Goswami will further explain that for a person who has unflinching faith in God and the spiritual master, everything becomes revealed very easily.
What is that verse?
Yasya
Devi Parabhakti
Tatalavi Tataguru Tasya Tahi
Tatakyota Prakasana
Prakasana
Prakasana Sanatma Mahatmanaha. One who has unflinching faith in both spirit, the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of all Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed within the heart. The word is implicit faith. That faith is without any other consideration. Implicit faith. Pritavata, firm faith, firm determination. Strata. Strata means faith, but strata means faith that's grounded in knowledge. A spiritual master is, you know, coming, he's acting on behalf of the Supreme Lord, therefore, have complete faith, whatever he says. There are two types of spiritual masters. What are they called?
Shiksha and Diksha.
And what's the difference?
We can have many Shiksha gurus, not only one Diksha.
Right. And?
Diksha gurus. Who gets the initiation?
Who connects one to?
Yes, and take the responsibility to take one back to God.
He also connects you to the Parampara, which is important. In many cases, just look at our disciplic succession. It is basically what kind of succession?
Shiksha.
You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's spiritual master was not Jagannathas Babaji, nor was Gaurakishore's spiritual master. They were shikshas to each other. So the line is shiksha. Shiksha means in the sense that one gives relevant instructions based on the teachings of the scriptures. In our society, shiksha is very important. Shiksha is very important because we have such a worldwide organization that many times the Diksha Guru is very rarely seen by the disciples, only a few times. So therefore it's incumbent upon the disciple to take shelter of the spiritual master's representative in that area and work under that guidance. And that way one and one is, two and two is four and three and one is four. One is getting the spiritual master's mercy through his representative, through his own saint. Delegated. Now, what's the difference between the instructions? The instructions cannot differ. If there's a difference in instructions of the guru who gives initiation and the guru who gives instructions for shiksha and diksha, then one must accept diksha. One must accept the instructions of the diksha guru. Just like if you're a spiritual master initiated you and you're working in another area and you get an instruction and you're not sure, present it to your spiritual master and he says, this is it, and then you accept. You can't say, well, you gave me one, you gave me another, both of you are gurus, and it says in the scriptures that shiksha and diksha are equal representations of the personality of God, and so I can choose which one I want. No. Diksha always remains prominent.
Also, when you speak of difference in instructions, you mean difference in principles, but not in details?
Generally, it is principles, yes. Details mean naturally. But I think what's required is a very careful understanding from the on the parts of the Shiksha Gurus. Now, when they instruct disciples who are, you know, the diksha initiated by another, they should take that into account. If they don't, the disciple can be misled. So I do a lot of Shiksha. I mean, I've been doing Shiksha for years. A lot. And I've learned over the years to always try to instruct and guide based on, you know, what they've gotten in the past, and not start off fresh. Because people will come to you with questions and guidance that you have to ask them. Well, what's your previous experience with your spiritual master? What's your previous experiences with other Shiksha? Because sometimes disciples, they remain insincere, and what they do is they go from senior devotee to senior devotee in order to find out the instruction that they like to follow, or the one that's the easiest one to follow. It's quite common. But it's not. It's an element of insincerity. An element of insincerity. Now, if the Diksha Guru says you work under the guidance of this person, and whatever he says you follow, then you can do that. Then there's no question. But if there's some reason to question, then why don't you go to Diksha? Yeah, I mean, Radhanath Maharaj, he told me, I don't like to initiate anyone who's not in India. He told me that. Because I can't take care of them directly. I want to be able to take care of my disciples. But then, it just became a phenomenon that there were people all over the world that wanted him. So, based on the system of allowing for them to work under another senior devotee who he knows and trusts, that is what we call second best. But a guru, he keeps good watch over his disciples. He's supposed to. You know, the guru sees his disciple deviant and grabs him by the ear and pulls him back. Hey, rascal, what are you doing? But because of the globalization of our movement and communication, it's very infrequent. It's unfortunate, and that's one of the problems we have. So it really depends. What it really depends on is the sincerity of the disciple. If they're really sincere, then they should take shelter and get guidance. It takes an extra effort on the part of the disciples.
Okay, so we'll continue with reading. Serving the spiritual master with faith and confidence.
Did you finish that first one?
Okay. Regarding accepting initiation from the spiritual master in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 17th chapter, verse 27, it is stated by Lord Krishna, "My dear Uttava, the spiritual master must be accepted not only as my representative, but as my very self. He must never be considered on the same level with an ordinary human being. One should never be envious of the spiritual master as one may be envious of an ordinary man. The spiritual master should be always be seen as the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by serving the spiritual master, one is able to serve all the demigods."
Oh. So Prabhupada writes that people who like to serve the demigods, but the spiritual master is the sum total of all demigods. One doesn't have to serve any demigod separately. Any questions regarding that?
I have a question.
Yes.
I think it's from the last point. The So the spiritual master should be considered as God. In ISKCON, even if we want to worship the spiritual master as God,
we get chastised
because we have to keep the picture of the spiritual master in a locker and don't show. So it's very.
I mean, like back in the 80s, we had a big. The 80s were quite turbulent in ISKCON. That's when all the gurus started to take off and get into this guru cult. And then that brought about a lot of competition, and in a sense, gurus started to fall down, and so many problems were there. So the GBC discussed, we went through thousands of hours of meetings and discussions and programs to come up with some kind of program which would work on a global level. That we keep Prabhupada in the center, and one can worship their spiritual master. But once a year on his, I guess, appearance day, there is a public thing you can have, the ceremony. But on a day-to-day thing, they cut out all the titles. You know, it used to be Vishnupad, Krishnapad, and this pad, and also
His Divine Grace.
They cut out the His Divine Grace. They left that exclusively for Prabhupada. This was done in order to solve the so-called dilemma of a worldwide society with so many spiritual masters. To get away from the guru cult. The guru cult is dangerous. It still exists in ISKCON. You know, one starts to just see their guru is everything and my guru is better than your guru. You know, there's competition between disciples and other gurus. There's also some enviousness there. So, keeping Prabhupada in the center, keeping Prabhupada's focus, his teachings, everything, and then the gurus also to make sure that they are 100% representative of Prabhupada. And worshipping, you know, our spiritual master as our spiritual master, as a full spiritual, not like the Ritviks say. There's only one spiritual master, Prabhupada. Everyone else is rich. That's also, you know, some concoction. There was never Prabhupada's teachings. So, this is a long history, and it's been discussed. So, in order to keep some kind of balance within our society, the initiating gurus in our society are given a lesser posture. Not a big ostentatious focus upon the guru in order to keep that focus, because we have so many gurus, so many disciples, it's a little dangerous. Anyway, if you study the history, you'll find that there's some teachings that Prabhupada wanted us to be in this position more or less, and not to kind of just take off as an ex-acharya. I mean, I know when I was in New Vrindavan, so many, you know, present-day gurus used to think I'm the next acharya. He fell down, and I'm not going to fall down because I'm the next acharya. Look what happened to the Gaudiya Math. That's why he elected the TBC. So again, the teachings of the founder of Acharya are the foundation. And we have others who are teaching and writing and preaching and they're self-effulgent, but still, in order to keep a certain posture within this time. His divine grace has been dropped, his names have been dropped, special Vyasa signs have been dropped, and daily worship has also been dropped. And the daily worship is done individually. And then everyone just worships Prabhupada. It's the only solution, I believe. It's a little bit of a change of the principle of guru, but it's the only solution given in a certain phenomenon of our society. But you see certain gurus who are very advanced, they have that principle on this. They don't want worship. They don't want all this focus. They simply want to keep Prabhupada in the center. So that became a problem. We had the 11 gurus and they had all their I remember they came to New Vrindavan and they had 11 Vyasasams, 11 different guru pujas, all in different places. Yeah. And it was really flamboyant worship. Really one. It wasn't Prabhupada's instructions, the best one. I do you see films of it. It was a turbulent era, boy. We're out of that era now. And we had some turbulent times. ISKCON, one thing someone said is ISKCON is lucky. All the possible problems that any large institution had happened still with the original devotees still alive. All these problems would have happened 50 years later. We would have never solved them. Because the original devotees were still there somehow. Was able to bring it back.
It's a little bit interesting though, like with us having Prabhupada in the center, which is definitely a great solution. But one can imagine as time goes on, it sort of turns into like a Christian thing. Like Prabhupada's the only way.
Like Jesus Christ?
Yeah.
Well, that's already here.
Yeah, you can already see that already formulated.
Yeah. The other aspect is no one respects the other gurus. And everyone just wants to chant Prabhupada's name, and sometimes they don't even pay obeisances to the other gurus, or don't even respect them. In America, it's like that. Depends where you are. America is very bad for respect. There's a lot more respect in Europe, but in India, the respect is very different.
America.
The scriptures say the farther west you go, the more materialistic you are. And what is the farthest west you can go from the planet? More materialistic. So it's the way it is. It's just a phenomenon of modern day society.
The internal meditation of the disciple should be, he should accept his spiritual master as the God.
As good as God.
But externally he would be.
There was an incident when Prabhupada first came to America. He was preaching in 26 Second Avenue. Even before that in other places in New York City. And he was saying, anyone who says he's God, G-O-D, is D-O-G, dog. So then he was preaching like that. And then on the first initiation ceremony, Prabhupada gave a lecture. And then at the end of the last line he said at the ceremony, and one should see the spiritual master as good as God. He turned and walked off. That was the last thing he said. Everybody freaked out except one person who understood the Prabhupada said. Now he's before he's saying anyone who says he's God, he's dog, now he's saying he's God. What's going on? And this one person who was Kirtananda, he said, no, he's not saying that. He's saying you should see him as God. It's like the example of the ambassador and the king. The ambassador represents the king, and he's treated as if the king was personally there. But he knows he's not the king. He takes whatever, you know, is given to him and he gives it to the king. So, in the same way, the spiritual master should be seen in that light. For the sincere devotee, his spiritual master is everything. He treats the spiritual master as if it was Krishna himself. The spiritual master doesn't see himself in that light. He sees himself simply as a representative of Krishna. That's our protocol. That's how we see things. Otherwise, if you see the spiritual master as ordinary, then you will not give him the proper respect and service that is required, and that will affect your spiritual investment. So the spiritual master's position is so exalted that it says that if one is worshipping in the temple, one should not stop the worship for anyone. And if one pays their obeisances in the temple to anyone, while a deity is there, it's an offense. But the sub-injunction is that if one's guru walks in, one can pray, one can pay obeisances, even in the presence of the Lord.
Yes. So, because I noticed this in ISKCON, this is the kind of, I always remember
the scriptures,
and where did you find that ISKCON a lot, especially with the sannyasis? When any sannyasi walks in, you know, all the worship is going on to the deity. The boys they hit the floor, you know, that's offensive.
Right. It's not the etiquette. It's not so offensive, but it's offensive. Because it's an act of devotion, but it's misplaced etiquette. You know, you can't fault someone for devotion, but when that devotion is done outside of the etiquette, it has become somewhat of a deviation. So it has to be corrected. Just like Gerald paid his obeisances to me the other day in the temple. I explained the same thing. When the Lord is there, all focus on the Lord. People, Indian people, they don't know. They come up and they touch your feet in front of the deity. You should be very careful not to do that. In fact, if they touch your feet, Prabhupada said you should immediately touch them on the head again. And it comes back. If they give you their karma, some of it, not all of it, they give you some of your karma. Anyway, if you're not spiritually strong, you get sick. Then all your head's in trouble and you're spiritual. The Prabhupada, you know, realized that this was the culture of India, and so how to avoid that, it's not easy. Because sometimes in trying to avoid that, you also offend people. So, you know, but generally, no. No one pays obeisances to another in front of the deity. If you want to do it, you do it in your mind. Generally, not getting down. That's all. Okay, is that clear? Yes. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Number 61. Is that the one, Ron?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no, it's page 65.
In the Skanda Purana, it is advised that devotees follow the path of Charyas and Sampa persons because by such following one can achieve the desired results with no chance of limiting or being baffled in his progress. The scripture known as Brahma Yamala states as follows. If someone wants to pose himself as a great devotee without following the authorities of the revealed scriptures, then his activities will never help him to make progress in devotional service. Instead, he will simply create disturbances with sincere students of devotional service. Those who do not strictly follow the principles of revealed scriptures are generally called sahajiyas. Those who have imagined everything to be cheap, who have their own concocted ideas, and have not followed the scriptural injunctions, such persons are simply creating disturbances in discharged devotional service. This connection and objection may be raised by those who are not in devotional service and do not care for the revealed scriptures. An example of this is seen in Buddhist philosophy. Lord Buddha appeared in the family of a high-grade Kshatriya king, but his philosophy was not in accord with the Vedic conclusions and therefore was rejected. Under the patronage of a Hindu king, Maharaj Ashok, the Buddhist religion spread all over India and the adjoining countries. However, after the appearance of the great stalwart teacher Shankaracharya, this Buddhism was driven out beyond the borders of India.
But he did a good job too. He kicked them all out. Probably any Buddhist left in India. That was thorough. Okay.
The Buddhist or other religionists do not care for what the scriptures sometimes say, that there are many devotees of Lord Buddha who show devotional service to Lord Buddha and therefore should be considered devotees. In answer to this argument, Rupa Goswami says that the followers of Buddha cannot be accepted as devotees. Although Lord Buddha is accepted as an incarnation of Krishna, the followers of such incarnations are not very advanced in their knowledge of the Vedas. To study the Vedas means to come to the conclusion of the supremacy of the personality of Godhead.
There you go. Study the Vedas means to come to the conclusion of the supremacy. Without that, your Vedic study is practically useless.
Therefore, any religious principle which denies the supremacy of the personality of Godhead is not accepted and is called atheism. Atheism means defying the authority of the Vedas and decrying the Vedacharyas who teach Vedic scriptures for the benefit of the people of Canada.
So this atheism is a broader definition which includes not only non-believers but those who do not believe in the personality of God. Okay?
Lord Buddha is accepted as an incarnation of Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But in the same Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that Lord Buddha appeared in order to bewilder the atheistic class of man. Therefore, his philosophy is meant for bewildering the atheist and should not be accepted. If someone asks, why should Krishna propagate atheistic principles? The answer is that it was the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to end the violence which was then being committed in the name of the Vedas. The so-called religionists were falsely using the Vedas to justify such violent acts as meat-eating. And Lord Buddha came to lead the fallen people away from such a false interpretation of the Vedas. Also for the atheists, Lord Buddha preached atheism so that they would follow him and thus be tricked into devotional service to Lord Buddha or Krishna.
Mark. Prabhupada gives a lengthy discussion on Buddhism here. And it pretty much goes into nice detail. Any questions on that? I went to that prison program in Snake River. Someone asked me that same question. And basically, I explained. Generally, what Prabhupada said that, not as thorough. And it was accepted. Buddhism is atheism. Generally. There are some Buddhists who are actually theists, but they're rare. They're called Mahayana. There's Hinayana, Mahayana, and Theravada, and Zen. Zen is the worst. Theravada is also atheistic. Hinayana is not so bad. Mahayana Buddhism is somewhat of a pure light Buddhist school, except Kuan Yin is the supreme. Kuan Yin in Taiwan is a female, and Kuan Yin in Japan is a male personality they worship as the Supreme Lord, which gives them a little bit of pride. But generally, this was adopted by the local cultures and added to Buddhism. Buddhism is a whole combination of so many things because there's no real foundation to the teachings. The teachings are mostly just morality. High, very moral principles, but no theistic principles are very self-denial is very high. Self-sacrifice is very high. But the principle is that you become nothing, and then therefore Buddhism really doesn't believe in the soul. There's no conception of the soul in Buddhism, because the idea is that we have to become nothing material, merge into the void, and become extinct. And we void out our personality, and then we have reached nirvana. So when you become nothing, you're happy. Very good philosophy. And the discussion in Chaitanya Charitamrita is a long discussion between Lord Chaitanya and some of the Buddhists. And there's 9 principles that are listed as the basic principles that show Buddhism as pretty much an atheistic, at best moralistic principle. And Buddhism is very big in America. Because it reflects the consciousness of the Americans. Impersonalism, Buddhism reflects the consciousness of Westernism, because then no one wants to surrender to a personal God. Because therefore you have to do what he says. And doing what he says means you don't have to change your life. So people want spiritual life where they can add it to whatever they're doing and be the same. But the spiritual life is not like that. It's actually gradually coming, awakening our spirit nature, and therefore there's a transformation of consciousness.
It's kind of interesting in Buddhist philosophy, like you said, it seems like mostly just about morality, like be a good person, right action, right speech. But at the same time, they don't believe in a personal God. So how can you can't really teach morality without?
It's a concoction.
It's like a trick.
It's a concoction. Yeah, I mean, Krishna concocted this whole thing. It's the Eightfold Path of Enlightenment, you know. In meditation, in various types of austerities. But what was the last thing you said?
Basically, what, like right action, right mind,
yeah, yeah.
Right
speech. But the thing is, ethics is more or less what we say moral principles. But where does ethics come from? Spiritual principles. Ethics, there's no such thing as mundane ethics. Because everybody redefines mundane ethics according to their own understanding. We read that one book, compilations of various writings by Kamal Krishna Goswami. It's on the cover, and some of the method colleges behind it is playing there.
Yeah.
Now, very one essay is about ethics. Where do ethics come from? Ethics actually comes from spiritual principles. There's no such thing as mundane ethics. So what is spiritual? I mean, you ask a Buddhist what is spiritual, they just give you the opposite of material. And therefore, spiritual means to meditate, spiritual means to study scripture, spiritual means to deny oneself, material means to feed oneself. So they give you a reverse definition of material in terms of what is spiritual. But that's not true. Spiritual is what falls into the category of service to the Lord. So one could be driving a car, and that's spiritual if it's driving for Krishna. One could be painting a room. It could be spiritual if he's painting it for Krishna. Of Krishna at the moment. So the difference is between material and spiritual is that it must be under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And there are certain principles, of course, we follow. Prabhupada was saying yesterday, these four regulative principles are the foundation for all morality. They're the root. They're the root of all sinful activities. Prabhupada said, if you cut out the root, then you cut out all the extensions of that. So follow these four regulative principles and you're actually moral and engage in devotional service. But they just have a hundred and thousands of moral principles. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. Do this, do this, do this, do's and don'ts. Mostly it's all yama niyama. Yama niyama, yama niyama. Meditation, they chant mantras. There's so many different schools of Buddhism. I mean, they're really nice people. They really don't have any understanding. So when Sankaracharya spoke what he was teaching to, the Lord Shiva spoke what he was teaching to Parvati in the form of Sankaracharya, he said, I come in this age of Brahman to teach Vedic principles based on non-Vedic, and he teaches the Vedas based on non-Vedic principles. Something like, similar to Buddhism. So, Buddhism is covered in theism. Sankaracharya's philosophy is also covered in theism. Both Krishna and Shiva came as Buddha and Sankara in order to teach religious principles according to time, place, and circumstances. So they actually brought people away from the believers. Buddha did. Sankaracharya brought them back. So they're both teaching somewhat of a form of an atheism. Why does Krishna do that? Here, it says here. Prabhupada says, first of all, wanted to end the violence, which was then becoming committed in the name of the Vedas. Let's see. Yeah, why should Krishna propagate atheistic principles? Because he wanted to end violence that was used in the name of religion. You know, nowadays you see Islam, it's a wonderful religion, but they're deviated from the true teaching. They're using violence as a religious principle, which is really creation of their own, of a misinterpretation of their scriptures. And therefore, based on that, something may come along just to destroy them and reestablish true Islamic principles, just to get them away from that. That's what Krishna did here. When the Vedas were being used in a violent way, stop the Vedas. Can't stop the violence, stop the principles. What's the violence is based on? That's Buddha. Oh, okay. This is one. The next one is one of my favorite statements.
Inquiring about eternal religious principles. In the Naradiya Purana, it is said.
Naradiya Purana.
It is said, if one is actually very serious about devotional service, then all of his purposes will be served without any delay.
Okay. So the answer is, what is the qualification for success? One has to be very serious. Sincerity, seriousness, and qualifications. Questions? Next one?
Being prepared to give up everything material for Krishna's satisfaction. In the Padma Purana, it is stated, for one who has given up his material sense enjoyment and has accepted the principle of devotional service, the opulence of Vishnu Loka, the kingdom of God, is awaiting.
Okay. Next.
Residing in a sacred place. In the Skanda Purana, it is also said that for a person who has lived in Dwarka for 6 months, for 1 month, or even for one fortnight, there is awaiting elevation to the Vaikuntha Loka, and all the profits of Sarupya Mukti, the privilege of having the same 400 bodily features of as Narayana. In the Brahma Purana, it is said, the transcendental significance of Purushottama Kshetra, which is the 80 square mile field of Lord Jagannath, cannot be properly described. Even the demigods from higher planetary systems see the inhabitants of this Jagannatha Puri as having exactly the same bodily features possessed by one in Vaikuntha. That is, the demigods see the inhabitant of Jagannath Puri as being 400. When there was a meeting of great sages at Naimisharanya, Sutta Goswami was reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, and the importance of the Ganges was stated as follows. The waters of the Ganges are always carrying the flavor of Tulasi offered at the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And as such, the waters of the Ganges are ever flowing, spreading the glories of Lord Krishna. Wherever the waters of the Ganges are flowing, all will be sanctified, both externally and internally.
Okay. Living in a holy place. holy rivers, holy place. they're known as the Dham, the boat of the Lord, which falls into the category of being non-different from the Lord. And devotional service performed in the Dham always has much more spiritual potency than in other places. That's why it's recommended that one take pilgrimages to holy places at least once a year. You should go to Mayapur, Vrindavan, Jagannathpur.
Cool.
When you go, after you got initiated, you should. Maybe you should go for Kartik.
They're supposed to send me their time for the Vrindavan ashram.
I have the dates. I have the list written upstairs. I can tell you what the dates are. I know exactly where I'm when the dates are and what they're doing. I'm going to Govardhan this time. Spend some time in Govardhan here. Stay there for at least 4 or 5 minutes. Yes, yes.
About the all the inhabitants of Jagannathpur has already achieved Sarupya Mukti.
They all have four hands. You can't see it, but they do. The residents of Puri all have four arms. Skanda Purana also says simply by taking rest in Jagannathpur, you get the benefit of performing, getting the benefit of 100 obeisances.
So when we see a devotee from the Jagannathpur, we see a
devotee. Coming from back, it's just like very special. Or it says that even if the residents in Jagannath Puri sometimes they eat fish, but eating fish in Jagannath Puri is like eating havasyana. That is the most relishable of all prasadams. So Jagannath Puri is not in the material world, nor is Vrindavan. Now, there is the holy books, especially places like Puri, where Lord Jagannath is the home of Jagannath, but at the same time, it's also a place where Lord Chaitanya spent 18 years of his life. The place is saturated with Lord Chaitanya's foot dust and holy things. Not only that, these dhams are. They come from the spiritual world and descend into the material world. When people come to the Dham perform materialistic activities, that's not the activities of the Dham. The Dham reveals himself, Premanjari Dham Bhakti Vilochana, Sankasa Daiva Vidya Shivilokyanti, Yam Shama Sunya Chitti Gunati. When the eyes are infused with love, one can see Krishna, one can see the Dham also. With spiritual vision, you can see the Dham. Sometimes you go to the Dham and it looks normal, ordinary, but it's not. You stay there long enough, you will actually see it. Dhams respect one to behave in the Dham like if they were in the spiritual world. Very important. Okay, so it's 10 minutes left. So I'll give you the questions. So read the rest of the chapter very carefully and then answer these questions. But please read the chapter, don't just answer the questions. That's my humble request. I know you all have so much service to do. But you will benefit tremendously if you just read this chapter. Okay, because chapter 7.